Millions of shortwave receivers are sold around the world every year, and therefore a few words might be useful on some of the factors or characteristics that make up the specifications of a receiver, because it's these that indicate to you the kind of performance you can expect from a given shortwave receiver. Specifications always seem to be written especially to create confusion in the mind of the customer, particularly when they've been written by a sales-minded ad man, which is unfortunately how some brochures describing receivers are produced. So the factors that we'll explain for you are sensitivity, selectivity, image rejection, band spreading, AVC, that's automatic volume control, and stability. So let's start with sensitivity, which, put in its simplest form, is the capability of a receiver to pick up weak signals, and despite its own internal noise level, to give a listenable audio output. To give a receiver a rating for sensitivity, it should have been tested by the manufacturer under certain standardized conditions. And what is measured is the level of signal needed at the antenna input to give a standard level of audio output at the speaker or headphones. Since the internal noise of the receiver has to be taken into account, the usual method of measuring the sensitivity gives a figure which is the ratio of the signal input plus noise divided by the noise only. Also, since the bandwidth that the receiver is set at will have an effect on the noise, this should be known, because the greater the bandwidth, the greater the noise level. The bandwidth will usually be either 3 or 6 kHz. Therefore, the sensitivity rating will usually read that for a certain level of signal input in microvolts, the ratio of signal plus noise over noise is a certain value in decibels for a certain bandwidth in kilohertz. Now, to put some sample figures to this, for a professional receiver costing thousands of dollars, a typical sensitivity reading would be that for one microvolt input, a signal plus noise over noise ratio of greater than 12 dB was obtained at a bandwidth of 6 kHz. Compare this to a typical shortwave listener's receiver costing between $100 and $200, where a 2 microvolt input might give a ratio of 10 dB, at usually less than 6 kHz bandwidth. So this makes the professional receiver approximately twice as sensitive, but it's also many times more expensive. Let's look now at selectivity. Selectivity is a receiver's ability to select the desired station out of the crowded short wave bands and reject the adjacent channel signals. And this is achieved by the design of the tuning circuits in the receiver. These circuits are designed so that any input signals whose frequency is outside the bandwidth the receiver's selectivity is set at will be greatly reduced or attenuated so that they will not interfere with the wanted station. So let's put some figures to this general description to see how it can be interpreted and to demonstrate just what we're trying to achieve. By international agreement, the channel separation on the high-frequency broadcast bands has been set at 5 kHz. So therefore, in an attempt to prevent adjacent channel interference, most broadcasters have filters installed in their transmitters to attenuate all emissions more than about 5 kHz from their carrier frequency. Therefore, a shortwave receiver should have a selectivity bandwidth between 4 and 5 kHz to give a good audio quality. If it is less than this, the audio quality will, of course, not be so good. What we're looking for, then, is a receiver with the selectivity designed so that input signals with frequencies more than, let's say, 4.5 kHz from the wanted frequency will be attenuated so much that they won't interfere with the wanted signal. And a generally accepted figure for this amount of attenuation is at least 6 dB. Unfortunately, though, a lot of receivers are still being manufactured which give the sensitivity figure for either 3 or 6 kHz bandwidth, and these receivers are used for single sideband transmissions. Therefore, it will be necessary in these cases to make a guess at the 4.5 kHz bandwidth figure. Most receiver specification sheets will also give the selectivity bandwidth at 60 dB attenuation. Now, as a guide to deciding whether a particular receiver will give good adjacent channel rejection, the bandwidth at 60 dB attenuation should not be greater than twice the bandwidth at 6 dB attenuation. For example, if the receiver selectivity bandwidth at 6 dB is approximately 4.5 kHz, the bandwidth at 60 dB attenuation should not be greater than approximately 9 or 10 kHz. The next receiver specification we're going to look at is image rejection. And to explain this, it is best to start with an example of what image reception or image interference is. Then the need for image rejection in the receiver will be understood. Now, first of all, the problem is caused by the fact that most receivers nowadays use the superheterodyne principle, and in this type of receiver, an internal oscillator is made to beat against the incoming signal picked up by the antenna. By design, the frequency of the receiver's internal oscillator always tunes to a frequency higher than the incoming signal, by a known and fixed amount. And this difference in frequency is called the intermediate frequency, or the IF. It is this IF frequency which is further amplified by the receiver, and from which the final audio is taken. Unfortunately, with this system, it is possible that a second incoming signal picked up by the antenna at a frequency greater than the internal oscillator frequency, by an amount also equal to the IF, will beat or heterodyne with the internal oscillator to give a second IF input that will interfere with the wanted signal. This process is called image reception, or image interference. So the receiver must have the capability to reject this interference, hence the term image rejection. So once again, let's put some figures to the process we've been talking about. If we have a receiver with the usual IF value of 455 kHz, and we want to tune in a station on 15325 kHz, then the internal oscillator will be set at 15325 plus 455 kHz, that is 15780 kHz. Now, because of the problem of image reception, the receiver will also pick up any signal on the frequency which is the sum of 15780 kHz and the IF frequency of 455 kHz, that is a total of 16235 kHz. Since this frequency is in the fixed services band, this unwanted image reception could be of CW, RTTY, that's radio teletype, facsimile, or frequency shift keyed, FSK transmissions. However, the effect of this phenomenon can be reduced by having a pre-selection stage to improve the selectivity, and also by having several stages of IF amplification in the receiver, or by having a higher IF value for the receiver. Next, we're going to look at band spreading, which is an aid to tuning in a wanted station. Apart from the fact that the shortwave bands are crowded, normal separation between channels is only 5 kHz. Therefore, the average number of channels in any of the high-frequency broadcast bands is about 50. Now, the average shortwave receiver, particularly the portable types, may be designed to give only 1 to 2 inches on the tuning dial to any particular band. This means that physically, on the receiver's tuning scale, the channels can be separated by only as little as 1/32nd of an inch, and the tuning cursor, that's the moving pointer, may be that wide itself. Hence the usual reaction of frustration on the part of a listener using one of the smaller receivers. And to add to the problem, these listeners are usually beginners. So a means of expanding or spreading the band over a greater part of the tuning dial is a great help in making the shortwave listener's life less frustrating. Even a fine-tuning device is better than nothing at all. But a band-spreading capability in a receiver is practically a must if the normal tuning dial is too small. Let me point out that the professional communications receivers do not need this, since their tuning scales are large enough to present no problem. They usually have about 5/16 separation between 5 kHz channels. And many of these nowadays are being manufactured with frequency synthesizers and digital readouts. That's an electronic dial. So the problem doesn't exist on this type of receiver. So it's the majority of portable receivers that give the problem. Now, band spreading naturally increases the cost of a receiver because it requires the addition of more tuning circuits in the receiver itself. With it, either a complete band or parts of a band can be retuned on another scale on the receiver, which will, of course, be longer and so make the action of tuning easier. Now let's move on to automatic volume control, AVC, or as it's sometimes called, automatic gain control, AGC. What the AVC circuit does is automatically maintain the audio output of the receiver at a constant level, despite the fact that the input RF signal may be fluctuating. And as far as the SWL is concerned, this is one of the best devices for combating fading. Also, it removes the necessity to change the volume control setting when tuning from weak to strong signals. It is preferable that the AVC be applied to at least two IF stages of the receiver. One of the reasons for this is to prevent the AVC acting too soon, before the output has reached the desired level. Or, in other words, the AVC will be trying to prevent the output from increasing, even though it was not at the desired listening level. Brochures containing specification figures will give the amount of control that can be expected from the AVC by indicating the amount of change in the audio output for a given change in RF signal input. Now, as we've done with the other characteristics, let's apply some figures to our general description. Here we run into the same problem as we did with some of the other characteristics, and that is non-standardization of the method of presentation. Therefore, the sample specification figures that I'm going to give are the more usual ones seen in manufacturers' brochures. A receiver with an AVC which gives only a 3 dB change in audio output for a 60 dB change in RF input should give satisfactory results. Now, to further illustrate what these figures mean, a 3 dB change in audio output is just barely detectable by the ear, and a 60 dB change in RF signal means that the signal has increased from 1 microvolt to 1,000 microvolts, or 1 millivolt. Now, the last shortwave receiver characteristic that we're going to look at is its stability. And this is the capability of the receiver to stay tuned to a signal despite being subjected to a number of outside influences. These would be varying the gain control setting, variation in the temperature of the surroundings, fluctuations in the supply voltage, and of course mechanical shock. This last item is very important, particularly for the portables that are moved around a lot. As you can see, there are a lot of things that can make a receiver wander off the station it's tuned to. So it's impossible for a manufacturer to specify the effect of all of these. Therefore, the usual method is to specify the effect of supply voltage fluctuations and variations in the surrounding temperature, or as it's usually referred to, the ambient temperature. At this point, perhaps a word on room temperature might be timely. Since temperature changes can have a considerable effect on the stability of a receiver, it's very good practice to maintain the room at a constant temperature as far as possible by preventing such things as drafts from windows, etc., blowing onto the receiver. But as far as specifications are concerned, after the receiver has had an initial warm-up period, it should not drift more than 100 hertz from the indicated frequency, even though the supply voltage may fluctuate plus or minus 10%. This is, of course, providing that the ambient temperature remains constant. So there we are, a look at shortwave receiver specifications and what they mean.